Chapter 36. To the corn department. Meanwhile, Lucetta, never having been informed that Tencher had entered her husband's service, rambled straight onto the barn, where she came suddenly upon Tencher, and gave vent to a little H, which the happy and busy Donald was too far off to hear. Tencher, with withering humility of demeanor, touched the brim of his hat to her as Whittle and the rest had done, to which she breathed a dead alive good afternoon. "I beg your pardon, ma'am," said Tencher, as if he had not heard. "I said good afternoon," she faltered. "Oh yes, good afternoon, ma'am," he replied, touching his hat again. "I'm glad to see you, ma'am." Lucetta looked embarrassed, and Tencher continued, "For we humble workmen here feel it a great honor that a lady should look in and take an interest in us." She glanced at him entreatingly. The sarcasm was too bitter, too unendurable. "Can you tell me the time, ma'am?" he asked. "Yes," she said hastily, "half past 4. "Thank'ee. An hour and a half longer before we are released from work." "Ah, ma'am, we of the lower classes know nothing of the gay leisure that such as you enjoy." As soon as she could do so, Lucetta left him, nodded and smiled to Elizabeth Jane, and joined her husband at the other end of the enclosure, where she could be seen leading him away by the outer gates, so as to avoid passing Henchard again. That as he had been taken by surprise was obvious. The result of this casual encounter was that the next morning a note was put into Henchard's hand by the postman. "Will you," said Lucetta, with as much bitterness as she could put into a small communication, "will you kindly undertake not to speak to me in the biting undertones you used today, if I walk through the yard at any time? I bear you no ill will, and I am only too glad that you should have employment of my dear husband, but in common fairness treat me as his wife, and do not try to make me wretched by covert sneers. I have committed no crime, and done you no injury." "Poor fool," said Henchard with fond savagery, holding out the note. "Oh no better than commit herself in writing like this. Why, if I were to show that to her dear husband, pooh." He threw the letter into the fire. Lucetta took care not to come again among the hay and corn. She would rather have died than run the risk of encountering Henchard at such close quarters a second time. The gulf between them was growing wider every day. Farfrae was always considerate to his fallen acquaintance, but it was impossible that he should not, by degrees, cease to regard the ex-corn merchant as more than one of his other workmen. Henchard saw this, and concealed his feelings under a cover of stolidity, fortifying his heart by drinking more freely at the Three Mariners every evening. Often did Elizabeth Jane, in her endeavors to prevent his taking other liquor, carry tea to him in a little basket at 5 o'clock. Arriving one day on this errand, she found her stepfather was measuring up clover seed and rapeseed in the corn stores on the top floor, and she ascended to him. Each floor had a door opening into the air under a cat head, from which a chain dangled for hoisting the sacks. When Elizabeth's head rose through the trap, she perceived that the upper door was open, and that her stepfather and Farfrae stood just within it in conversation, Farfrae being nearest the dizzy edge, and Henchard a little way behind. Not to interrupt them, she remained on the steps without raising her head any higher. While waiting thus, she saw, or fancied she saw, for as he had a terror of feeling certain, her stepfather slowly raised his hand to a level behind Farfrae's shoulders, a curious expression taking possession of his face. The young man was quite unconscious of the action, which was so indirect that, if Farfrae had observed it, he might almost have regarded it as an idle outstretching of the arm. But it would have been possible, by a comparatively light touch, to push Farfrae off his balance, and send him head over heels into the air. Elizabeth felt quite sick at heart on thinking of what this might have meant. As soon as they turned, she mechanically took the tea to Henchard, left it, and went away. Reflecting, she endeavored to assure herself that the movement was an idle eccentricity, and no more. Yet, on the other hand, his subordinate position in an establishment where he once had been master might be acting on him like an irritant poison, and she finally resolved to caution Donald. 34. Next morning, accordingly, she rose at 5 o'clock and went into the street. It was not yet light. A dense fog prevailed, and the town was as silent as it was dark, except that from the rectangular avenues which framed in the borough there came a chorus of tiny rappings, caused by the fall of water drops condensed on the boughs. Now it was wafted from the west walk, now from the south walk, and then from both quarters simultaneously. She moved on to the bottom of Corn Street, and, knowing his time well, waited only a few minutes before she heard the familiar bang of his door, and then his quick walk towards her. She met him at the point where the last tree of the Enjerding Avenue flanked the last house in the street. He could hardly discern her till, glancing inquiringly, he said, "What, Miss Enjerd, and are ye up so early?" She asked him to pardon her for waylaying him at such an unseemly time. "But I am anxious to mention something," she said. "Indeed, I wish not to alarm Mrs. Farfrae by calling." "Yes?" said he, with the cheeriness of a superior. "Indeed, what may it be?" "It's very kind of ye, I'm sure." She now felt the difficulty of conveying to his mind the exact aspect of possibilities in her own. But she somehow began, and introduced Henchard's name. "Sometimes fear," she said with an effort, "that he may be betrayed into some attempt to insult you, sir. But we are the best of friends. Or to play some practical joke upon you, sir. Remember that he has been hardly used. But we are quite friendly. Or to do something that would injure you, hurt you, wound you." Every word cost her twice its length of pain. And she could see that Farfrae was still incredulous. Henchard, a poor man in his employ, was not to Farfrae's view the Henchard who had ruled him. Yet he was not only the same man, but that man with his sinister qualities, formerly latent, quickened into life by his buffetings. Farfrae, happy, and thinking no evil, persisted in making light of her fears. Thus they parted, and she went homeward. Journeymen now being in the street, wagoners going to the harness makers for articles left to be repaired, farm horses going to the shoeing smiths, and the sons of labor showing themselves generally on the move. Elizabeth entered her lodging unhappily, thinking as he had done no good, and only made herself appear foolish by her weak note of warning. But Donald Farfrae was one of those men upon whom an incident is never absolutely lost. He revised impressions from a subsequent point of view, and the impulsive judgment of the moment was not always his permanent one. The vision of Elizabeth's earnest face in the rimy dawn came back to him several times during the day. Knowing the solidity of her character, he did not treat her hints altogether as idle sounds. But he did not desist from a kindly scheme on Henchard's account that engaged him just then. And when he met Lawyer Joyce, the town clerk, later in the day, he spoke of it as if nothing had occurred to damp it. "About that little seedsman's shop," he said, "the shop overlooking the churchyard, which is to let. It is not for myself I want it, but for our unlucky fellow townsman Henchard. It would be a new beginning for him, if a small one. And I have told the council that I would head a private subscription among them to set him up in it, that I would be £50, if they would make up the other 50 among them." "Yes, yes, so I've heard, and there's nothing to say against it for that matter," the town clerk replied, in his plain, frank way. "But, Farfrae, others see what you don't. Henchard hates EA, hates E, and 'tis right that you should know it. To my knowledge he was at the Three Mariners last night, saying in public, that about you which a man ought not to say about another." "Is that so, ah, is that so?" said Farfrae, looking down. "Why should he do it?" added the young man bitterly. "What harm have I done him, that he should try to wrong me?" "God only knows," said Joyce, lifting his eyebrows. "He shows much long-suffering in you to put up with him, and keep him in your employ. But I cannot discharge a man who was once a good friend to me. How can I forget that when I came here twas he enabled me to make a footing for myself? No, no. As long as I've a day's work to offer, he shall do it if he chooses. Tis not I who will deny him such a little as that. But I'll drop the idea of establishing him in a shop till I can think more about it. It grieved Farfrae much to give up this scheme. But a dam having been thrown over it by these, and other voices in the air, he went and countermanded his orders. The then occupier of the shop was in it when Farfrae spoke to him, and feeling it necessary to give some explanation of his withdrawal from the negotiation, Donald mentioned Henchard's name, and stated that the intentions of the council had been changed. The occupier was much disappointed, and straightway informed Henchard, as soon as he saw him, that a scheme of the council for setting him up in a shop had been knocked on the head by Farfrae, and thus out of error enmity grew. When Farfrae got indoors, that evening the tea kettle was singing on the high hob of the semi-egg-shaped grate. Lucetta, light as a sylph, ran forward and seized his hands, whereupon Farfrae duly kissed her. Oh, she cried playfully, turning to the window. The blinds are not drawn down, and the people can look in, what a scandal. When the candles were lighted, the curtains drawn, and the twain sat at tea, she noticed that he looked serious. Without directly inquiring why, she let her eyes linger solicitously on his face. Who has called? He absently asked. Thy folk for me? No, said Lucetta. What's the matter, Donald? Well, nothing worth talking of, he responded sadly. Then, never mind it. You will get through it, Scotchmen are always lucky. No, not always, he said, shaking his head gloomily as he contemplated a crumb on the table. Know many who have not been so. There was Sandy McFarlane, who started to America to try his fortune, and he was drowned. And Archibald Leith, he was murdered. And poor Willie Dunglas and Maitland McFreeze, they fell into bad courses, and went the way of all such. Why, you old goosey, I was only speaking in a general sense, of course. You are always so literal. Now when we have finished tea, sing me that funny song about high-heeled shoon and siller tacks, and the 41 wooers. No, no. I coldna sing tonight. It's Henchard, he hates me, so that I may not be his friend if I would. I would understand why there should be a wee bit of envy, but I cannot see a reason for the whole intensity of what he feels. Now, can you, Lucetta? It is more like old-fashioned rivalry in love than just a bit of rivalry in trade. Lucetta had grown somewhat wan. Oh, she replied. I give him employment, I cannot refuse it. But neither can I blind myself to the fact that with a man of passion such as his, there is no safeguard for conduct. What have you heard, O'Donald, dearest? Said Lucetta in alarm. The words on her lips were nothing about me, but she did not utter them. She could not, however, suppress her agitation, and her eyes filled with tears. No, no, it is not so serious as he fancied, declared Farfrae soothingly, though he did not know its seriousness so well as she. I wish you would do what we have talked of, mournfully remarked Lucetta. I've up business, and go away from here. We have plenty of money, and why should we stay? Farfrae seemed seriously disposed to discuss this move, and they talked thereon till a visitor was announced. Their neighbor Alderman Vatt came in. You've heard, I suppose, of poor Dr. Chalkfield's death? Yes, died this afternoon at 5, said Mr. Vatt. Chalkfield was the councilman who had succeeded to the mayoralty in the preceding November. Farfrae was sorry at the intelligence, and Mr. Vatt continued, well, we know he's been going some days, and as his family is well provided for, we must take it all as it is. Now I have called to ask ye this quite privately. If I should nominate E to succeed him, and there should be no particular opposition, will E accept the chair? But there are folk whose turn is before mine, and I'm over young, and may be thought pushing, said Farfrae after a pause. Not at all. I don't speak for myself only, several have. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.